Hi, this is Juan Soto, and with me today I have Andy.
Hi, I'm Andy Tavis with WorkSmart Database Masters.
And I'm with IT Impact, and today our topic is going to be about migrating Access to SQL Server. I'm an Access MVP, and I own this firm, IT Impact Inc., and that's our specialty. And what I tell people is I'm not an expert in SQL Server, but rather an expert on the interaction between Access and SQL Server, how to optimize those two. And he does a lot of work in this field as well, especially as Access Web Apps. Before we get started, I want to let you know we are brought to you by AccessUserGroups.org. This is an organization I founded several years ago where users from around the world, Access users from around the world, gather either evening or at lunchtime or in the afternoons to talk about Access. So please sponsor us by going to AccessUserGroups.org. It's a free to join. And join us on our next meeting. Andy has two groups on there. I have one, Access with SQL Server. And he does Access Web Apps and Michigan User Group. And we would love to have you there. By the way, before we also get started, I want to let you know that please stay to the end of the video because we're going to show you how you can win this one here. What's his name again? Bucky. The Channel 9 mascot. So stay to the end of the video and I'll show you how you can win this. All right. So, you know, this is a topic that I love talking about. I'll talk all day if you put a quarter on me, but this is one of my favorite topics. And the reason being is because there's so much benefits from upgrading to Access to SQL Server.
Absolutely.
You know, a lot of times we get calls from clients where they're experiencing slowdown in Access and they can't, they're happy with the Access application, but it's just taking too long. Or they have security concerns, or it's getting corrupted more and more often. Sometimes they frequently have to restore from backups, and their data gets corrupted. These are all signs of possibly the database could be benefiting from SQL Server. It could be signs of a badly designed database. We'll talk about that in a minute. But once you know, upgrading to SQL Server can be a straightforward process, or it can be quite complicated based on the application itself. And so a lot of times we come in, it's already done. The X database has been in place sometimes for many years, and our job is to get it to SQL Server. It rarely, we do sometimes new implementations. When you do something from scratch, it's a lot easier, right?
Right.
But we're not talking about that today. What we're talking about is you have an existing X database, and you want to migrate that data to SQL Server. So, about me, you can reach me at jsoto@itimpact.com. Andy, what's your email address?
Andy@worksmartdb.com.
Andy@worksmartdb.com.
DB like database. Andy@worksmartdb.com.
You can also reach me on LinkedIn. Connect with me at linkedin.com/Juan Soto. And my expertise is Access with SQL Server. And let's go ahead and get started. So one of the reasons why I'm doing this topic is because it can be really challenging to migrate Access to SQL Server. You know, a lot of times people have the wrong expectations. And so what usually I do is I tell my client, this is what you can expect during this process and how much time it's going to take and what are the gotchas that we're going to have encounter here. And it's hard for me to give them an exact estimate of how many hours it'll take. I just don't know. You know, if it's a smooth migration, it can be anywhere from 24 hours. If it's a very complex migration, it can take us months. I recently upgraded a factory down in Memphis, Tennessee. They had 34 Access databases. We migrated every single one to SQL Server. It took us 6 months. And unfortunately, because they were linked together, they were small little Access databases, we couldn't just do them piecemeal. So we had to migrate them all in one shot. So that was a quite complex database.
Now, Juan, is there anything from a user standpoint in that situation where you have people that have Access databases, they want to move them to SQL, are there things that they can do to prepare for that transition?
Yes, that's what we're going to talk about next.
Okay.
The first thing you need to do is make sure you fix any performance issues before you migrate. So a lot of times Andy and I would come across databases where the table is missing a primary key or it's missing a foreign key. And, you know, Access is great because it's very forgiving. If you create a table without a primary key, it'll work. Fine. You know, you can add data, you can join it with other tables. It will not work once you migrate to SQL Server because in SQL Server it'll be read-only.
Right.
And SQL Server will be read-only. I caught you by surprise. Sorry.
No, I was thinking that for users that aren't familiar with what a primary key or a foreign key is, it's basically the tie between different tables within the database. It's what you use to index those tables. So, for instance, if you have customers and orders, you've got a customer ID would be a primary key. You might have an order ID as a primary key in the order table, and then customer ID in the order table would be a foreign key, because that foreign key is related back to the customer.
So it's imperative that you take the time to address any issues with your access database before you go down this road, because what will happen is it'll get magnified once it gets to SQL Server. So if something was slow already to begin with in access, it could be this slow because you had 25 users in it. It could be it's slow because the network is slow. But if nobody's in the database and you're running this report and it takes 5 minutes to do, you need to fix that issue before you do the migration to SQL Server. Now, it could be that it could benefit from an index, a secondary index. It could be that the queries are designed wrong. It could be the queries can be simplified. All those issues, address them first before you go to SQL Server, because once it's in SQL Server, it's a lot more expensive to change, and it will get worse and it won't get better. So if you're hoping the SQL Server will fix any performance issues due to a bad design, it doesn't do that. It's just going to make it worse, right? You know what? Well, you asked that with a project plan, right? What is the method to the madness to get you from access to SQL Server? So we always submit a project plan to our clients, and that's what we're going to talk about here today. How to go step by step and migrate to SQL Server. And so the first thing is we recommend using SQL Server Migration Assistant. So SSMA means SQL Server Migration Assistant. You want to make sure you grab the latest version, I think it's version 6, off the Microsoft website. And you want to get the one for Microsoft Access, because they have ones for Oracle, they have ones for other database platforms. You want to download and use and install the SQL Server Migration Assistant. If you need help with that, there is a blog article on my website, accessexperts.com/blog, where you can get the SSMA, where you can get the tutorial on how to properly install, configure, and use SSMA. Once you do that, then you've migrated that data through SQL Server. Then in SQL Server, you may need to fine-tune the database with additional indexes and primary keys, and additional views and stored procedures. We're going to talk about that. Now, SQL Server Migration Assistant, or SSMA, may ask you to convert all the queries over the views. I don't recommend that. What I recommend is you'll migrate the tables. It'll ask you to create the database for you in SQL Server. It will migrate your data. It'll verify all the data got moved over. If not, it'll error out and tell you. And third, you can set it to add any primary keys if you like. If it's missing, right? It'll add primary keys and foreign keys, and also row version fields, which are critical to letting access know that the data has changed on SQL Server.
So my assumption, if you don't want them to convert it from queries to views, I'm assuming you're not wanting to do that because you have no idea what those queries will look like. They could have been created correctly. They may be not have the proper indexing.
Correct.
It'll be much faster just to create in those queries from scratch and do it right the right way.
Exactly.
Right off the bat.
Exactly. And you know, honestly, a lot of queries in Access use custom functions. Those won't get converted over. Parameterized queries won't get converted over. Right, so if you have a query that's asking the user for a for an order ID or a customer ID or region number or region ID, the SQL Server doesn't know how to ask that from the user. All SQL Server knows is serve up the data. You have to query that independently, right?
Right.
So I just don't convert any queries, and then I, through the progress of the project, which I'll talk about here shortly, I explain how to migrate those queries specifically that are causing problems.
Great.
Now, so our first round, we go through rounds of optimization, right? So the first round is you migrate the data to SQL Server. The second is, then once you have migrated, you check to see if everything's working correctly. So you actually launch the database, you check to see if the forms are okay, the reports are right. And if you're happy with the performance, and this is where it's subjective, right? If I do this, I'm not the one that's been using this database for many years. And so, for example, I might come across a report that takes 30 seconds to run, and I tell myself, wow, 30 seconds, that's a little too much, right? Let me just see if I can optimize it 3 seconds. Well, that's a mistake, because when you go and you call the customer, customer has told me, oh, it used to take a minute and a half, so thank you very much. I'm so happy. Mm-hmm. He went from a minute and a half to 30 seconds. I'm really glad about that. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're perfectly happy, so they won't, they're not going to pay me to optimize it from 30 seconds to 5 unless I ask them and say, hey, it's at 30 seconds now. Would you want me to get that in 5 seconds? They might say, oh, no, we run that report once in a while, and usually we run it, we go get some coffee by the time. 30 seconds is fine. Don't spend your time on that. So, you know, the first round is you optimize the least possible and you let the customer have it, right? The other aspect to this is when we do these things, we try to do the migration on the customer's network. And when we do that, the reason we do that is because we want to get under realistic conditions, right? We're not going to do this in a lab isolated in our facility, because if we do it in our lab, if it won't perfect because it's on the same PC, the database, there's no network issues, there's no latency issues. You want to do the conversion at the site, the job site, so you can simulate conditions and be able to do that and get back to the client. It doesn't mention it here, but I do recommend that you use SQL Server Native Client 11 to connect to SQL Server. It's the best client for two reasons. Number one, it's faster and more reliable than the SQL Server client that comes with every computer in Windows. Mm-hmm. That's a really old driver. It'll work, but it's slower than the native one, which is a little bit faster by 20%. And the second thing is you can use it with ADODB. We have a blog post at my website called Easy ADODB. Mm-hmm. And you can see all these blog posts I referenced, by the way, by going to accessexperts.com/start here. So if you go there, accessexperts.com/start here, I have a collection of blog posts for anybody who's starting to do a migration in SQL Server and all the gotchas you can get. And talks about easy ADODB and where to get the SQL Server Native client and so forth. So once we've submitted that to the first client, the client's going to get back to us. And I speak in terms of client because I have a consulting practice, and so does Andy. But this could be that you're an employee there, right? So you want to make sure that the users of the database have a chance to use it and get it back to you if you're at a company. So again, speed is subjective. That's my first point. You want to make sure that they test it. And then what you want to do is they'll come back to you and they'll say, this query is too slow, this report is too slow, this procedure is taking too long. And now you've got the baseline to go in and fix with additional views and stored procedures. So the fact is that you give it to them, they come back with feedback, you address those issues via a view. It could be that you can create a view so that a SQL Server has a stored execution plan of that view and can optimize it, right? Think about it. When you have a report that's based off a query in Access, that's 20 tables, for example, really big query, right? Well, Access, what it does is sends the query code to SQL Server. SQL Server then digests it and works with it and sends it back to Access. But there is no stored execution plan in SQL Server, right? It doesn't get optimized, and so it has to create the execution plan every time, and you can't fine-tune it. So when you have, this is one of the things that we do is, if you have a query that's at least a couple tables, I usually tell my employees, just create the view in SQL Server, make sure you optimize it, make sure you can see if it's got priority, keep missing indexes, and then save the view, and that saves our execution plan with the view, and now it's optimized, so next time you call that, it can load in memory and keep it in memory. Another factor is we deal a lot with SQL Server Express.
Right.
Right? We love it. SQL Server Express is free. We call it the best thing that ever happened to Access. And so there's three limitations of SQL Server Express you need to be aware of. Number one, it uses only 11 gigabytes of data on the hard drive, which is fine because Access has a 2 gigabyte limitation.
Right.
So you're never going to run into that problem.
Right. 1 gig per table, yes. 2 gig per database.
And so if you're upgrading from Access, you're not going to have that issue, right? Number two, it uses only 1 gigabyte of RAM on your server. So if you have a large server with 16 gigabytes, it's only going to use 1 gigabyte of RAM. And number three, the third limitation is it will only use one core of any core on that server. So if you have 4 cores or 5, 6 cores or whatever cores you have, it's only going to use one core. Now, given those limitations, SQL Server Express can still run circles around Access. So it's still a worthwhile upgrade, and we do this all the time. But you need to understand that if you have an Access application that was being used by 5 users, and then you optimize it to SQL Server, and now they put 20 users on it, 30 users, 40 users, 100 users, now you're hitting that SQL Server. It's only got 1 gig of RAM. There's a lot of traffic, a lot of locks and tables and so forth. You may be ready to do a standard upgrade to SQL Server Standard, right? Instead of using SQL Server Express.
Right.
So that's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about is the initial setup. You still have 5 users on there. You don't have 100 yet on there. But you have to keep that in mind. And when you use SQL Server Express or Azure, you have to buy the units, right? So you start with the cheap unit machine, and then you start upgrading it more and more until you have the performance that you look at, that you need, right, mm-hmm. from Azure. What not to do? You know, we talked about this. You want to give the app to your client as soon as possible. Don't optimize it too much right away because you don't know if they're okay with 30 seconds on the report. We talked about that. The second aspect is, this is important, and that is you can spend a lot of time and money optimizing something in Access, SQL Server, excuse me, mm-hmm. and reach a very small improvement level, right? So you spend a lot of time for a very small improvement. Mm-hmm. In the SQL Server. So we call that an elliptical curve, where as you spend more and more time on it, you get less and less return on your money. Mm-hmm. And so we let the client know up front, says, look, sometimes what we need to do is redesign this, right? So we'll redesign it, right? So we convert it from a view to a stored procedure. And then we started using data sets. And then, you know, but at some point, you're just going to have to realize it is what it is. And not spending more time on it because you're just not going to be able to get the performance that you need, and then you have to address it some other way. So you created a database using SSMA, and the one reason, again, I love SSMA is because later on you can then upload the data to SQL Server as many times as you need to throughout the project, and you'll need to do that often. So you did the data migration the first time to create the database,
right?
And then you went ahead and you optimized the database. You gave it to your client. They gave it back to you. And then let's say, for example, 2 weeks later, you want the client to have an alpha version for testing.
Right.
Well, that's 2 weeks of old data that you upgraded from the first time.
Right.
So what you do is you go into SQL Server Migration Assistant, and you migrate the data a second time, and then you give it to the customer. And now they have the latest data. They can compare apples to apples. Because a lot of times they'll do is, so I run the old Access database with the new versions on SQL Server, and they want to test to see how it works, right, versus mm-hmm. new. The same orders I have in Access are the same orders I have in SQL Server. I can pull up orders, customers, and so forth.
Now, does that store the differences between the two different data structures so that when you go to basically convert it a second time, that it's that transition is faster, or do you have to go field by field again?
That's a great point. And so that's why you want to fix performance issues before you go to SQL Server, right? So if you have a database that was not designed right to begin with, like for example, they don't have an order header or a details table, they just create an order table. Mm-hmm. And so they're repeating the customer ID every time. Well, that's a wrong design. So what you would do is you would create an order header table with the customer ID, and then order details with the products they ordered, the services they ordered.
Right.
You do that before you migrate to SQL Server, so then later on, you can just migrate it all in one shot anytime, many times you need to. But now what I recommend is sometimes you got to add fields in SQL Server. There's no way around that. You add them at the bottom of the list of every table so that the migration assistant can then append the data to those tables and ignore the new ones, because obviously you don't have those new ones in the Access database.
Right.
In the old Access database.
Do you also encounter strange things where people are using characters, reserved characters, mm-hmm. like question marks and those kind of things in Access databases?
All the time.
That can really be a
Yeah, problem. They'll use them in their field names.
Yeah, I've seen them field names, right? And table names. And
what SQL Server SSMA will do is they'll create the field in the SQL Server table, but surround it with brackets. And so now you got brackets. And that's a big no-no because it makes the development a lot slower.
Right.
It's going to hamper you later. I know it's a pain in the butt. You're better off renaming those fields and those tables correctly.
And that's even if they just have spaces.
Yeah.
As well.
Get rid of spaces, question marks, you know, and all that stuff before you migrate. Because trust me, later on, it'll come back to bite you. And you want to be able to, easily program this stuff, and you want to hate to do the open bracket, close bracket all the time.
Right.
On those fields. And again, just an indicator of how forgiving Access can be compared to SQL Server.
Right.
Just it talks about how wonderful it's Access almost is. Almost
too forgiving.
Yes,
in some cases.
It'll let you do a non-normalized database with different field names, like crazy right. field names and so forth, and just terrible. So, I mean, that's terrible in the sense that for us, that we have to migrate it. It's great for the client who originally started out. A lot of times people design these databases with no database experience.
Right.
And God bless them, they're just trying to help their company. And we want to help them too, but we got to explain to them, say, no, we now got to migrate the database and fix these issues before we migrate.
Right.
So basically what I'm saying here is stick to SSMA so that you can migrate the data during different critical stages, right? So for example, if I do and I'm ready to do beta testing, I got to upload the latest data, right? So I'll do that for beta testing. And when I do final rollout, the cutover, I'll need to do migrate the data again. Speaking of data migration, you know, when you do data migration with SQL Server Management Assistant, it'll actually tell you it migrated all the rows of data. So if a database table has 1,000 records in Access and it only moved over 900, it gives you an alert. So it's only 900, 1,000, right? And so you want to pay special attention to that. A screen pops up in SQL Server Migration Assistant and it shows you the errors and problems you encountered. So that's just one aspect of it though, right? I could migrate my rows over to SQL Server, but what happened if there was a mistake in one of the fields? And so you want to be able to do additional testing to see if all got moved over.
Right.
And there's two ways I do that. One is with sums. So say, for example, you have an order header table, and one of the fields in the order header table is order total. So what I'll do is, in the old Access database, I'll create a query that calculates all the order totals, and I'll come out to a big number of like $4,256,000. And I'll do the same thing in SQL Server, make sure I get the same number. And if I don't, I know the data migration was an issue.
Yeah.
The other aspect of this is once you have the beta completed and you have your reports done based on SQL Server data, run those reports in SQL Server and run those reports in Access. And they both got a match. If they don't match, you know you got issues. And it could very well be, when it comes to reports, it could be a malformed query in SQL Server. It could be that the query was wrong to design with, was wrong to begin with, and didn't realize it was wrong until you did. It could be that the answer you have in SQL Server is correct, and the old report was wrong to begin with, right? So you don't know.
And don't feel like you have to only sum those items that are currency. You can even sum things like order IDs or things that you wouldn't normally sum, because that's another way of just comparing the data.
Yeah.
You know, so
make sure they made over.
Right.
All right, so let's talk about this. You're ready to cut over, right? You did your alpha testing. You did your beta testing. The customer can't wait to get using your database. So now you're ready to cut over. A lot of times we deal with both Andy and I deal with mission critical databases. And so it's a database that's in use Monday through Friday during business hours.
Right.
They can't live without it, right? So they can't be down the whole day while I migrate something over, right? And so what I'll do is I'll sit down with the client and I'll say, can we do this Friday afternoon? You know, it's like, so for example, 2 or 3 o'clock or another period in the week where it's really slow, right? Most likely it's Friday afternoon because let's face it, a lot of people might not be thinking about doing things there, and they can say, oh yeah, we can stop at 3 o'clock and then from 3 to 5 you can migrate. So if that's the case, we'll migrate the Friday afternoon, and then we'll check our data sums. Like Andy mentioned, we add up the sums. We check the reports, like I mentioned. We make sure all the records got moved over. And if there's any issue at all, you've got Saturday, and then worst case scenario, you got Sunday to come in and fix them.
Mm-hmm.
The important thing to do is you give yourself space, right? You don't cut over on a Tuesday to Wednesday, because then you're going to be there overnight.
Right.
And you may have to call off the migration. And that's another thing that we do. We have an emergency plan in place. What if we migrate and there's a problem, right? So you migrated Friday, you tested, everything went well. And this actually happened to me once. Mm-hmm. And then Saturday, Sunday, you fix any issues. They come in Monday morning, everything went fine. Monday, they use the database correct. Tuesday morning, they give me a call. It's not working. And it so happens that we have missed some queries that we did not optimize, because when they did the beta testing and the alpha testing, they didn't bother checking from one day to the next. And then we learn about that, you know, all right. these batch of queries that are wrong.
Right.
So we end up doing this. We end up telling the customer, and the good thing we did, because they said, look, you got to save your data on Monday and Tuesday, maybe Wednesday. So if there's any issues, we can go back to the old version. That's what we actually did. We actually want to go back to the old version, enter all their data for Monday, excuse me. And then we fixed the queries, and later on in the month, we did the migration.
Right. I've even run into one where, you know, I'm in the middle of doing the transition. I'm getting the new database all set up, ready to go. And some IT guy within their office decides to change an integer field over to a character field. Ooh. And, you know, and then the conversion's done, and the data... there's something wrong. You can tell there's something obviously wrong because their data didn't pull over. And nobody told me.
Oh, boy.
You know, and it's you just have to watch for those things.
So it's important that you have a fallback plan, especially if it's a mission-critical app, right? In this case, my client couldn't ship if the application was down. You don't want to cost them money.
Right.
All right, so you want to make sure that you have everything in place. All right, so additional tips that I'd like to talk to you about is you want to separate the data migration from new features. A lot of times they're excited about you being there, and they say, hey, can you fix this little problem we had from this report or this email? We want to email, start emailing now reports. Mm-hmm. This is great. I'm happy that you want us to use us, but you know we need to finish this first phase.
Right.
And then we'll concentrate on new features and new functionality.
Yeah, we call it scope creep.
Yep. And so you want to avoid that. You already got a lot on your plate to migrate this data to SQL Server. You don't want it obfuscated with new fields that you add on the tables and new queries that don't exist in the old database and new reports and so forth. You want to get over this hump and then concentrate on new features. The other aspect of this is... migrating to SQL Server will afford you the opportunity sometimes to work with the IT department, which is a wonderful experience. A lot of times as Access developers, we come in, we have no exposure to the IT department. We're dealing with department managers and supervisors and personnel. Nobody from IT is there. But having a migration to SQL Server may sometimes require their involvement.
Right.
And their buy-in. So this is a wonderful opportunity for you to establish rapport with that department so that you can work with them going in the future with additional features, right?
Absolutely.
And get their buy-in. All right, so you've done the migration, and everything went smoothly. Now you're on the new application with the SQL Server. Now you can consider doing a lot of other things, right? So what will happen is, like my example I told you, you have 5 users originally. And then 6 months go by, and they put it on 10 users, and then 20 users. And then it gets slower and slower, and that's when you start getting calls. And so what you want to do there is start offloading work from Access and onto the server. The way you do that is with stored procedures and with views, right? So that's your chance to come in and really shine and validate the decision to go to SQL Server and be able to make it more responsive by having SQL Server do most of the work instead of Access. Mm-hmm. One critical query that you want to stay away from is what I call a mixed query, where you have tables in Access and tables in SQL Server. You bring them together to do a join in Access, and that's the worst kind of query. It's going to take forever to execute. The reason being is, let's just say, for example, you have a state table in Access, and you want to have a report to list the state of the customer, spell out the state, right? So Illinois would be IL in column 1, and then Illinois in column 2. Or you might have state ID in column 1, and then Illinois, and IL in Illinois. Well, I ran into a situation once where I got a call from a query that was taking way too long. I mean, this thing was ridiculous. And when you have a mixed mode query like that, what ends up happening is SQL Server doesn't know about the state table. So when Access submits the query to SQL Server, SQL Server replies back, says, we don't know about this table. Here's all your data from all the other tables, and you do the query. Hmm. Right? So those tables have hundreds of thousands of records. All that data has to come down to the Access client. Access does the query, and then finally it spits out the report. And that could take minutes upon minutes and sometimes quite long. So there's a easy solution to that. is you create the same table in SQL Server. So a lot of times we'll have a table of states. Mm-hmm. Then let's face it, we're not going to add a state anytime soon here, right?
Maybe so, Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico might come on board soon, in which case you'll have to jazz them. But what you would do is you would have that table both in access, because you want to use it for dropdowns. You don't want to go to the server to get the list of states, right? So the state table, when you're using a dropdown, it's a local table in access. When you're doing queries in SQL Server, it's using the version on SQL Server for that state table. Mm-hmm. So you have it in both places. And usually that happens with data that seldom changes, right? Such as states, terms, payment terms rarely change. You're not introducing a new payment term every week, right? 30 days, 15 days, 60 days, 90 days. Those are usually the payment terms
right.
people deal with. So that's another example of a table that can be on SQL Server and in Access. And then the nice thing about it is we tell clients is you make this investment to SQL Server Express, you can then now extend your website to include the data on SQL Server. So say, for example, we've upgraded an order database to SQL Server backend. And so what we tell clients is later on, we can modify your website so they can go to your website.com/login and then have your clients log into a web app that we create for you. And that web app is using data straight from SQL Server. So now you have both the web users using the data and the access users all coming off and reading off from one database.
Right.
So it's just a wonderful way to leverage the investment. So that's how I sell them on this. This is we can leverage your investment in this so that you can do more things later on.
Right.
Great. So I'm hoping that you liked the presentation. Andy and I put a lot of work into these presentations, and we'd love to hear from you. So please tweet about it, add comments at the Access User Group website or on LinkedIn. We have an event coming up here every May. So if you're listening to this video and you're in Europe or in Spain in particular, please come to this Spanish website, descubrepoderdesudata.com, and join us.
Easy for you to say.
Yes, yes. And it's just a real pleasure for us to do these. Now, let's go back to our prize here. Mm-hmm. If you want to win Bucky, the Channel 9 mascot, all you have to do is tweet about this video with a link to the video. The first person that tweets about the video gets this little Bucky in the mail. U.S. residents only, no employees of IT Impact or
WorkSmart. Or Microsoft.
Or Microsoft qualified. So this has been a pleasure. Andy, thank you very much for helping me out.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, this is Andy and Juan signing out, and we'll see you next time.